Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
It's Tony D here on the Nighttime on Yahoo Sports Radio. All right, let's look at college football. We just played 8 weeks. We're heading into week nine, and things are getting closer and closer to the season. We just got the committee. They'll be releasing their playoff rankings in about a week or so. Brian Fisher joins us from Bleacher Report to help us go on what's going on in college football. How are you, Brian?
I'm doing great. I'm a little concerned, though. You said week nine. That means we're hitting the downslope on the college football season here.
I say that every single week. I feel like yesterday it was Labor Day, and we're like, oh, we got a full season ahead of us, and now I'm looking at it going, we're down to the stretch run now.
It's crazy how fast things go, and I'm excited, though. I think the last couple weeks here of October and into November are really the best time for college football, and I know I can't wait, and I know millions of fans out there can't either.
All right, let's start with Baylor, who lose their quarterback, Seth Russell, as he will have surgery on his neck, and they give it up to a true freshman, a quarterback. If you're a Baylor fan, you may hear all the glowing things about the new quarterback that's coming in, but does this affect Baylor and how they may be perceived, how their seven games may be perceived by the committee who may not judge them for that, but may judge them for what they are now?
Well, when you look at the rankings that are going to come out next Tuesday, it's going to be on what Baylor has done already. It's not going to factor in their quarterback getting hurt. It's not going to factor in any of that. It's going to be what has happened on the field, what's happened with their schedule, which we all know is very weak up to this point. And the fact of the matter is it really doesn't kind of start their season until next week, and when they go to Kansas State on Thursday. I think that's when we're really going to see what Baylor does. And then the following week after that, on Tuesday when the rankings come out, that's how we're going to see how the committee is going to determine what this Bears team is all about with Jarrett Stidham, that quarterback. Now, I think he's a very talented true freshman quarterback. Obviously, he was rated, five stars by a lot of the recruiting services. I know that staff in particular really liked what he can do with the football in his hands. But the bottom line is Seth Russell was terrific so far this year. He really was really the guy that added another dimension in terms of his ability to run. And more than anything, I think really kind of took over that leadership role that Bryce Petty and some of the guys had last year. So that's the thing that nobody knows. Even the Baylor team, they don't know how this whole team is going to react. And the tough thing is, look, this is their tough schedule coming up. They got the Kansas State trip, but after that, it's Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, and TCU. And that's the meat of their order. And we'll see how they handle it going forward.
If we are with a bunch of undefeated teams by the time that committee gets together and they kind of push Baylor down a little bit, can we interpret that as a message to teams, get some people on your non-conference schedule?
Well, I think that's been the message all along, and I think Baylor, to their credit, it's so tough nowadays to really change and do a 180 in terms of your non-conference schedule, because these things are getting scheduled so far in advance. I mean, we're already talking about 2028 and 2030 type matchups down the road for some schools, and I think that should be reined in a little bit because of situations like we've seen with Baylor. Obviously, when they were scheduling a lot of these non-conference games, they were not very good. They were trying to get the bowl eligible team. That certainly come back to bite them in the rear end in 2014 and 2015 now. I think the key thing to keep in mind, though, is if they go undefeated, the way they have looked so far with guys like Corey Coleman, with that defensive line with Andrew Billings and Sean Open, I think the committee can recognize that this is a very good football team. And I don't know if they're necessarily going to get penalized as much as where it would affect their seeding in terms of that top four rankings if they ended up running the table. And let's face it, if they do end up at 12-0, they're going to have beaten a very good Oklahoma team, have beaten an Oklahoma State team that's probably going to finish in the top 25. And of course, right after Thanksgiving, they're going to beat TCU on the road, and I think that's going to count for a lot in the eyes of the committee, no matter what happens the rest of the year.
The team I'm kind of curious about in terms of perception is Alabama, because by the time we get to the committee, they'll have played LSU, and if they beat LSU, they will be a one-loss team amongst a couple of undefeated teams. Is it possible that Alabama gets in the top four over undefeated teams like a TCU or a Clemson based on who they're beating so far?
I don't think so, and I think the argument of the one loss Alabama is really against Stanford more than any other team in the country, because the committee does value those top 25 wins, and when you look at Alabama's schedule, they really just don't have it. Yeah, they've looked good at times, and they've shown flashes of having all those five-star and four-star recruits really, really, you know, kind of live up to their billing. But the fact of the matter is they struggled against Tennessee at home. They struggled against Arkansas at home. You know, those impressive road wins against Georgia and Texas A&M, in retrospect, they don't really look that good. And I think that's the thing to keep in mind is, you know, Alabama, really their season comes down to LSU. And really making a statement in that SEC title game. That's what it's going to be if they win that division. And again, that's not no sure thing, not having that tiebreaker over Ole Miss. You know, it's still possible the Rebels win the SEC West, and Alabama is sitting there with just one loss and still looking on the outside looking in. And I think that's another thing to keep in mind is everything's so fluid right now. But, you know, if Alabama does run the table, they're not going to have the top 25 quality wins that some others are going to have. And I think that really does hurt them this year, even though they might be one of the better teams in the country.
I liked Clemson's win over Notre Dame, but in reality, how good are the Tigers?
I think they're very good. I think, you know, you look at what they lost defensively last year. Everybody was kind of scratching their head. How good are they going to be? But Brent Venables, the defensive coordinator, has done a masterful job of not only getting those guys like Shaq Lawson and helping elevate their play, but really the guys you wouldn't expect to have been starting to step up. And I think the offense is terrific. Yeah, they lost their offensive coordinator and Chad Morris to SMU, but they really haven't missed a beat. And they've got some guys, I think, when you look at their roster, certainly it starts with Deshaun Watson, who certainly he's kind of on the outside looking in, kind of having a couple of weeks in terms of the Heisman Trophy voting, but completing nearly 70% of his passes, 15 touchdowns in really his first extended action as the starter. I think he's been terrific. Wayne Gallman at running back has really been a revelation. And they've replaced a lot of guys along the offensive line at wide receiver that they've been missing out. I think it's a very good team. I think it's a team that can certainly win out in the ACC. And let's face it, you know, with the way Dabo Swinney has that group playing loose and how well they've been playing in big games in the past, I wouldn't put it past them to win a semifinal type game if it came down to it at the end of the year.
Brian Fisher, Bleacher Report, as we talk some college football. Brian, when it comes to the Pac-12, you know, one of the things that we've been saying here for a while is, hey, listen, parity doesn't equal excellence. You beat each other up, you could be really good or you could be really bad. It doesn't tell us much. When you look at the Pac-12, is that a good conference that's beating each other up, or is it a mediocre conference that's beating each other up?
I think overall it's maybe a little weaker in terms of perception than we thought at the beginning of the year. Certainly USC and UCLA play a big part in that because those are the two that we kind of circle as kind of college football playoff contenders. But at the same time, the depth there is really apparent. I mean, you look at a team like Washington State sitting there with a chance to really take the lead in the North this weekend on Halloween. That's a squad that a lot of people thought, you know, maybe they sneak in and maybe get bowl eligible, but they have really improved from week one to now. The passing attack is very good, and I think it's those middle-tier teams that are a lot stronger in the Pac-12 than maybe we expected, while that top tier is a little bit weaker. And, you know, I think that at the same time, you know, you look at Utah, you look at Stanford, I've been able to see both those teams up close so far this season. They're the real deal. You know, they have good defensive line. I think that they play sound defenses. They run the ball. They have some quarterbacks who have been there in big games. You know, they are sitting there with one losses, but I think at the end of the day, the strength of the Pac-12 from top to bottom is going to play a factor for the committee more than anybody in the media or voters in the top 25, because I think you can look at wins and losses in that league and say, you know what, yeah, they're going to beat each other up a little bit, but the right teams are going to emerge at the end of the day out west.
We had a couple of teams that went, as you mentioned, Utah and also Florida State that suffered losses. Are these losses very, very bad for them? Are they recoverable for Florida State and Utah?
I think for Utah, yes. You know, you keep in mind with the youth schedule, they're still going to host UCLA in Salt Lake City in late November. I think that's going to be a big contest in the Pac-12 South. And they're going to have wins over, you know, an Arizona State team that might sneak back up into that top 25, depending on what they do late in the season. I think the USC loss, you can maybe kind of throw it away a little bit, you know, on the road, had invested so much over the last couple of weeks in terms of some of their wins. But you know, for the most part, that's emerging out of that conference where there's really not a weak link outside of Colorado, I think is impressive to a lot of people. Now, Florida State, I think that loss is a killer in terms of their playoff hopes. But at the end of the day, this was a rebuilding year. You know, when you look at all the talent that the Seminoles had lost, you know, this was going into 2015. There were a lot of high expectations around Tallahassee, but at the same time, I think the really true Seminoles fans knew that this was a team that was going to take a step back a little bit. Certainly, Everett Golson, you didn't know what you're going to get at the quarterback position, but you know, the bottom line is the schedule set up very well for them. It'll be interesting to see how well they play on the road against Clemson in 2 weeks. But the bottom line is this is, you know, a 9 or 10 win team that is really only a 9 or 10 win team, not based on talent, but based on the weak schedule that they have. And you know, I give Jimbo Fisher a lot of credit. He's a very good coach. He's gotten his guys ready to play, and you know, losing on a fluke play like that at Georgia Tech is always tough to kind of stomach, but they can rebound, and this is a team that really is kind of building for next year and the year after that.
I asked this question a couple of weeks ago about Steve Spurrier. If I was a young coach and I was looking to build a program and win a national championship, would I go to South Carolina? I want to ask you the same thing about Miami. If I'm a young coach and I have my choices of going to different programs and I want to win a national championship and I want to be put in a place that is built to win a national championship, is Miami a good place to go? Is Miami a good job today?
I think so, and I think it does depend a little bit on the eye of the beholder in terms of what it can be. Certainly, it's not going to be a job that's going to pay you $4 or $5 million a year. It's going to be closer to the 2.5-3 range. You know, your salary for your assistants, you're probably not going to be able to pay an offensive or defensive coordinator, you know, $1 million a year. And I think if you go into the mindset that you are aware of those limitations, I think you could still have a lot of success there. You're in the weaker of the divisions in terms of the ACC. I think the path to winning a league title and then maybe sneaking into the playoff is there. And, you know, let's face it, you don't have to go really far at all. You can drive an hour north, you can drive an hour south, and you can drive about 30 minutes, you know, west of there and find 25 guys that are very good. And if you talk with some of the guys that get drafted at other places, whether it be an Amari Cooper or those type of guys, they eventually wanted to play for Miami when they were growing up. I think that's a city that, you know, if you are aware of the limitations, you're never going to get a full crowd at home. You're never going to get, you know, all of those top guys out of the three counties down there. But if you go in with the mindset of, hey, we just need to clean up a few things here and there, we've got some talent to build around. Certainly the quarterback at Brad Kaya that the new coach is going to inherit is a huge building block to kind of build around. I think it's a job that you can compete for national titles, but it's not going to be an every year thing there. And I think that's just because of the way college football has changed, the way the limitations of that program are apparent. But for the right guy, I think you can come in there, you can win a lot and really use that as a stepping stone even for an elite job when you're talking about some of those top five programs around the country.
Brian Fisher again, Bleacher Report on college football. Appreciate your time tonight, Brian. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Anytime.
You got it. Brian Fisher again on college football. I kind of agree with him. I still think Miami is a good job. We were talking about this last night, Adam and I, about South Carolina, for example. And there are some openings around the country and whatnot, but I just focused on South Carolina. If you were a young kid, is Miami a better job or is South Carolina a better job? Certainly South Carolina could pay you a lot of money. Like he said, Miami's not going to pay you $4 or $5 million, but South Carolina could if you were the right guy. But I look at it building a national championship. If you're going to build a champion, you've got to have a strong recruiting base, and you've got to be able to build that wall. Like we talked about this yesterday, where it was the state of Miami and keeping the players that were in that state of Miami and getting them to Miami. South Carolina struggles with that because while it is the state school, Clemson is in the state. Georgia is just over the border. ACC schools just north of them in North Carolina can pick apart that state a little bit. South Carolina, it's not the easiest recruiting bet, especially when you have a team in your state that's winning. Miami, he's right that there's a good South Florida group that would like to stay in South Florida that don't necessarily want to go to Gainesville or all the way up to Tallahassee. And if you can get those guys to stay, you can build it up quicker. But I also think that the one thing that South Carolina doesn't have, or even Central Florida, that with George O'Leary just decided to retire too. One of the things that those two places don't have is this very vocal and very supportive alumni. And if you're the right guy, you can tap into that. You can tap into the Michael Irvins of the world, to the Warren Sapps of the world, to the Blades. I mean, you can tap into all of that Miami royalty that had been there for so many years and tap into that to build that program back up again. It's going to take the alumni really getting behind a new coach, a new coaching regime, players coming in and building that up. And South Carolina's got tremendous fan support. They've got a tremendous group that will go to those games even when they're losing. That's something Miami does not have. That stadium's empty. But I think if you're looking for a chance to win and win quickly, I think the ACC sets up for that. I think the alumni help you out with that. I think the recruiting base helps you with that. That's why Miami is a better job. 800-777-2907 is the number. Also, hit us up on Twitter at Tony D Radio. It is Tony D here on the nighttime, Yahoo Sports Radio.